What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You don't just live in your home, you live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, everyone. This is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Caroline, she's a queen of talking. Hey, what's on your mind? She's getting real, not afraid. Take her soul to soul, just let it flow. No one can do it quite like Caroline. It's time for Caroline.
Okay, I'm so happy to have Lit on Get Real. Y'all were my first guest ever back in the day.
Over at Lexus Studio, huh?
Yes.
That's crazy.
When I was launching this thing, when I was getting Get Real started, it was called Hyper Caroline Hobby because I'm freaking hyper like a hurricane and running around like an insane person just trying to stir a podcast up. Had no idea what a podcast was, how to do it.
And you were so, like, you rolled in and you were setting up lights and you were setting everything up like a pro. Even though it was the first one, you had it down.
I mean, you got to fake it till you make it. Y'all been, okay, let's segue into you guys. So thanks for being one of my first guests and believing in me from the beginning, guys.
And likewise,
here we are now in a studio.
All fancy.
We got a podcast president and legit. A producer. Are my earrings rattling too much, Abby? Is it fine?
They're a little rattling.
I'm going to take them off, but they look so
cute. It's a damn good microphone. Picking up.
They're so
up
cute.
That.
Okay, I'm going to take them off, but they're here. Let's remember them. They're great. They're from Monkeys, my favorite store in Nashville. Shout out to her. I mean, super cute, super loud. That's how I felt when I started the podcast, like my earrings. Pretty much just like this, running all over the place like a crazy earring, rattling the microphone. But you guys, so y'all have been a rock and roll band forever. Like, just celebrated a huge anniversary of one of the biggest rock songs of all time, My Own Worst Enemy.
25-year anniversary.
It's crazy.
What in the world?
It's insane.
The song is almost as old as we were when we wrote it.
How old were y'all almost when y'all wrote down. It?
Like mid-20s. Yeah. I was like 25 or 26.
And y'all are brothers.
We are.
So y'all have got a lot of dynamics going on here.
We're still brothers after all these years.
I know. How? How have y'all remained the, look at y'all, like besties, even matching opposites in black and white shirts, matching tattoos, got the cool hair.
We are exactly matching opposites.
Are y'all really?
In real life.
Is that how it works?
If that's a thing.
I only own this.
Yeah, Jeremy has a dress code for sure.
I buy black t-shirts 12 at a time, and then that way I don't have to make any decisions early in the morning. You know?
Open Jeremy's closet, it's literally 100 black t-shirts.
I mean, exactly.
With the same kind of tennis shoes and shoes. But your thing, something about Jeremy Popoff, everyone, you are the most OCD, cleanest person I have ever met in my entire life.
I do like that.
I thought
like
that. Do you match that, AJ? Are you the same?
I try. It's hard when you live in a household with two Cane Corsos that sort of dominate and a wife that doesn't really feel the same way I do when it comes to, she's not OCD. Like I, so that's kind of weird. It's a balance, you know, it's taught me to kind of like, don't worry about it. Mm. But I'm kind of a clean freak, I guess.
But you're not just a clean freak, Jeremy.
Well, I will, like, I'll walk over right now and straighten your paper out on your lap.
Just driving you crazy.
I do have that problem, yeah.
But then, you know, I am like that, but then also, like, I embrace chaos, too.
And you do.
I have two pigs that you got to come over and see the new baby.
What's the new baby? Bring you Sunny. Know Sunny's going to die. Sunny named Sunny's her first gonna... pig Dixie Lemonade. Sunny insisted on lemonade. That was her name.
That's we had
name.
To include lemonade in. So on her birth certificate, it's hyphenated.
That's a great godfather right there, godmother. Thank you guys for honoring Sunny's wishes.
And then we have Lucille now.
Lucille.
And she's, we call her Lucifer because she's just, I swear, I'm waiting for her head to spin around on her shoulders sometimes. She's crazy. We took us an hour to catch her. She was totally feral on a farm.
Oh,
took
you
us an hour
her?
To, well,
so
I mean,
this is a hog, Jeremy.
It was fenced. No, it's a baby. It's a mini. But
is she without a mom or something?
The parents were gone, so it was four piglets. They were like 6 weeks. And so the first one we caught, we caught two of them, and Lucille was like the little sweet, innocent one. And then
turned into the nightmare.
And then she took over the house. And yeah, she literally walks around. She has attitude. Like she kind of struts when she walks and just like lets everybody know.
Would this be like Lauren incarnated as a pig?
Like kind of.
Jeremy's wife, Lauren, is like, she's queen bee. Like, Lauren can run a ship. She can let you know how it needs to go. But she's also the sweetest, best, greatest ever. I love this. Yeah. So, do Lucille and Dixie Lemonade get along?
Slowly but surely. Uh-huh. Dixie doesn't really want a whole lot to do with her just yet. But Lucille wants to rock and roll with everybody. And so, they're getting there.
So, you went from getting eaten by Pamela Anderson in a bikini to a pig farmer.
Yeah. Tennessee will do that to a guy, I guess.
Right.
So how did this all get going? Y'all are brothers. So y'all are like the Kelsey brothers of rock and roll, right? You know, because two brothers making all this history together, which is really awesome. How did it get going? Y'all were in separate bands. AJ, you originally were the drummer of Razzle.
I mean, we went to all the concerts together when we were
Orange County kids.
Yeah, Orange County kids.
That was a big scene too, right?
Well, there were a lot. I mean, OC is massive. But as far as like music scene goes, we were more of a Hollywood scene band. So there was like being, you know, young kids in high school, there were no venues that were, you know, under 18. So our friends from school had to make the trek. We get party buses and bus everybody up to like the Roxy and the Whiskey. And so those are the shows. That's where we kind of got our roots in our school as far as like how to market a band and how to...
What'd you learn? How'd you do it? I mean, did you market a band back then? How old were y'all?
Guerrilla style.
Like, what does that even
like
14, mean?
14, 15.
How
I was
do you
like
do
14,
that when you're 14?
I pile into his car because I wasn't driving yet.
I was 2 years older. We went promoting every Friday and Saturday night. It was never a matter of where we were going. It was just a matter... Well, it was...
Pre-social media,
no social media. Yeah. It was all word of mouth.
So me and T-Bone, who he runs House of Blues now in Anaheim, but he grew up with us and he was like he just kind of got thrown into the mix, you know, hey dude, you're going to be the tour manager. Okay.
I love that though. Cause y'all built it as a family from such a young age. It's like a different kind of band and bond that way.
It was full brotherhood. To band. It still feels
it's
that
It's not
way.
Like it's talent, but it's also the brotherhood aspect that you just can't recreate that for as you get older. Okay. So T-Bone, he's tour managing. What are you doing? How does he know how to do this?
So him and I, in high school back then, we would have to take these, it was called ROP. I don't know if they still have that, but it was like trade school and you would leave high school at lunchtime. You would go to this other campus and you would learn how to build brick walls or fix cars, or we took print shop. And so we made flyers and we were able to get reams of paper at cost. And so we would print like 5,000 flyers, a whole case of flyers for shows, and then we would just go relentlessly and just pass them out, put them in stores.
Like hand to hand.
Like literally. Hand to hand combat.
Stacks, not even exaggerating, like this big, like freezing cold. We just put gloves on and grab a bottle of whiskey.
Just chilling with a microphone.
Hey, what's up? Can you hear that?
test, is this thing on?
Just one, two.
Amazing.
It was fun though. We had a good time. Like, the whole band would get together and we were meeting new people and we're meeting chicks and we were
We were just doing our thing. Stars from the beginning. How did y'all know you wanted to be a rock star, though? Because if you're 14 years old, you're 16, right? 2 years apart. Is that right? Y'all are so young. How did you guys even get the grand notion to be rock stars and then actually pursue it? Who in your life helped? Were your parents just like, go get it, boys? Like, how did y'all have this freedom just to go so hard like you did into this at such a young age?
A combination of a few things, I think. You know, our grandfather was a jazz musician. So we were always around. Like, he had an organ in his living room, and he had a drum set in the garage. So he was always playing something, always singing and playing, you know, the old standards. And we always thought that was just so cool. But our dad was in radio. Our dad was a radio DJ our whole lives. So we had all
radio
that.
Voice.
And then really it took, like, I think going to a rock show, going to a concert, and we just like looked at each other and just like couldn't believe
we were nine. I was nine and he was seven. Our dad took us to a concert.
What show?
Iron Maiden.
Okay. Started y'all off with
opening for UFOs.
Dang.
Super random, but
y'all went hard from the start.
Yeah. We were heavy metal kids and right from the very beginning we were like, that's what we want to do when we grow up.
You loved it instantly?
But we didn't know how we were going to do it. You know, I didn't play guitar yet, and we were just like, we want to do that. And then
together
as years,
it was a mutual dream that hit y'all at the same time.
Yeah.
Was that when the dream hit?
I think so. I mean,
the dream literally hit you at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, that was the impact, you know, that an arena rock show had.
You're like, this is what we need to do together. I mean,
if you look at pictures, like, you talk about fake it till you make it. We literally had like broomsticks and fake sweat. We'd wet our hair and we were just posing for pictures and like, you know, singing along.
You know?
we thought. And it's crazy being that young and just going, okay, that's what we're going to do. Like, now what do we got to do to get there? And just doing all those little things, you know, and just watching
them
build.
You had different bands in the beginning.
Yeah, not for very long, but yeah, because like he, you know, tell your story.
Because
yeah,
Because at 16, I was a little older and I was living with my dad. He was living with my mom for a couple of years. We were kind of, and I dropped out of school.
Your parents were divorced?
Yeah.
At that age, y'all each lived with a different parent?
Just for a short time, at 16, I moved in with my dad and, dropped out of high school so I could just focus on being in a rock band. And I was in a band with some older dudes and we were playing bars a couple nights a week and rehearsing three nights a week. And that was kind of almost like my junior college, if you will. I just was learning and observing and all that. And then a couple years later, when AJ and Kevin started driving and started, a couple years into puberty and then
grew up a bit.
And we were like, hey, we should all do this together. So we, you know,
did
I just
was kind
of. Did
you guys miss each other when y'all didn't live together? Did you even think about it?
We were always doing things together, you know. I was always hopping
in. I never
in
knew
his
that
car
piece
with
of the story.
Friends. And yeah, we
lived close, I don't know. 2 miles from each other.
And y'all's parents get along, though. Did they
always? We live together here in Nashville.
Yeah, y'all's the most epic divorce story ever.
Yeah, that's crazy.
A whole other interview, but our mom and dad and our mom's boyfriend share a place here in Nashville.
What? Yeah. I mean, come on. That's amazing. That's the dream
Three's
right
company.
There. To be able to realize, okay, we love each other, but we're not going to be together, but we still love our family. And then to be able to circle back around with a new boyfriend, all of them live together, that's
pretty
next level.
It's pretty crazy.
it's an awesome
You've got
dynamic.
To be proud.
It works, yeah.
You have to be proud of that. Go
it's
parents.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. That's like really taking the high road, you know?
Totally, especially at their age. They kind of like look out for each other and still, you know, kind of take care of each other. My dad will cook meals sometimes for all
sweet.
Them and vice versa. So it's, yeah, it's pretty
that.
Neat. It's very different dynamic.
That's what people should be
that's
doing.
That's the way it should be, yeah.
You know, because at the core, it's like we still love this family dynamic.
Yeah.
You know? Okay. So living in separate places, then you guys hit puberty. You're like, okay, now we can hang real level. We can really make this dream come true. So how Razzle happens though? That was your band and you were drummer?
I played one show as the drummer.
Like you
that's
didn't
how
know
we
you
built
could
it.
Sing? I think that's so funny that you like switched positions. Like you didn't even realize y'all started so young. You're still finding your position, you know?
Totally. I mean, we formed a band like during those times based on like how someone looked really. So it's like that guy, wait, he's wearing a concert shirt and I like that band. He looks cool. Like, what do you want to be in our band?
That's it.
And
right?
then figure out, you know, usually the guy that doesn't play anything becomes the bass player.
Why
no offense,
that?
Kev.
Just less strings. It seems like it might be easier to figure out.
I quit playing drums for two reasons. One, the main one is we couldn't find a singer and I always had a microphone set up. So I would sing like, harmonies or whatever. My God. And but the other reason was I just got tired of tearing down my own drum set and pinching my fingers on the stands.
Your mentality, yeah. Actually
messing up my car, you know, getting scratches on the, you know, in the back of the car.
You don't want to mess up your stuff.
You don't want to mess my stuff up. And I wanted an easier gig. I mean, it's a lot easier to carry one of these around.
Not true. You have to entertain the whole crowd. You have to
learned later on that I made the wrong choice. I'm like, wait a minute, you guys get to just like stay up all night and drink and do whatever. And like, my instrument is in my body and
you have to talk to everybody. I mean, not that y'all don't have a band dynamic. That's the cool thing about a band is because it truly is an entity on stage, which is, I just had Caroline Jones on here and she joined the Zac Brown Band as the only female. And she's like, bands like that just don't really exist anymore. They're such a dying breed. And you guys are in that where it's like, this is a band. It's a band dynamic. I feel like A Thousand Horses is like that. It's like, it's like y'all are a brotherhood. It's not just like, let's have the very best technical musician in the world who can hit the part. It's a vibe, you know?
Well, if there's something for me at least that's missing from music these days,
I would love to hear this actually.
Is that where you just get four kids or five kids with a dream and they start in a garage or a basement and they literally learn their instruments together and they play off of each other's weaknesses and strengths and learn how to write songs together and learn how to cohabitate together and be roommates together and all that. And now it's more about one person doing all the instruments on their laptop and then just rolling the dice and hoping to go viral. And it's like, you're missing that whole like, life. 10 years of like building a foundation.
Yeah. It's a life.
It's a team. It's it's like a sports team in a way, you know, where everyone's got their, you get your quarterback, everyone's got their duties.
You know your role.
But it's also, we developed together. So we talked about, we're grooming each other this whole time, you know?
Have y'all been able to grow together? Because that is something that I feel like is vital. It's like a marriage, you know, if you, especially y'all brothers, like there's bound to have been times where you hated each other. Like,
never hated each other, but we've had our, you know, we've definitely, we have fights, you know, we still do. It's just the two of us, you know, no other siblings, and to be in business together, family together, business, and together as much as we are being in the music business. So we're always, you know, in close quarters, and it's actually kind of a miracle that we haven't, you know, killed each other by now, because it's anybody, you know, and we all get along as brothers, you know, the other guys in the band, they kind of, when the real blood brothers start going at it, they all kind of like,
feel like
they all
leave the
run.
Room.
Yeah, they kind of run.
Everybody scatters. They're like, oh shit, the pop-offs are popping off.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, Kevin too is, you know, we've known since junior high.
Yeah.
And so he's a brother too. I mean, he's about as close to blood brother as
he's been
in
it since the 80s also, right? Yeah,
totally.
I've been in this band since the 80s.
I mean, we were
that's
friends.
Amazing.
We were friends like trading pictures out of magazines in junior high, like, you know, he was more into Van Halen and we were more into, you know, Iron Maiden, and so we would rip those posters out of like Circus magazine and swap them out. We were just fans of rock and roll before any of this, and so there was that foundation as well. So I think it was genuine love of music that brought us together, and then probably genuine love of each other and what we were doing, and little, you know, the universe was throwing us little bones along the way. Like, we sold out the Roxy. Yeah. We sold out the Troubadour when we were in high school.
Iconic LA club.
Yeah. I mean, it was,
especially back in that day. I mean, that was the spot.
It was definitely popping off.
Yeah.
Sunset Strip was like when you watched that, you know, the movie The Dirt, or if anyone's read that book, or we kind of caught the tail end of what was going on then, but we still, I mean, you couldn't move on the Sunset Strip. It was, you know, I'm like,
It would be like Broadway here in Nashville on a weekend night, except it was in Hollywood and it was all guys and girls with long rock and roll hair and leather jackets. And there were more people on the sidewalk than inside the clubs. And it was just a scene.
Oh my gosh.
Walking around with a bag and, you know, a bottle of Jack Daniels and being, you know, 16 and getting away with it at the time, you know, walking by a couple of cops, you know, they're just kind of like, just making sure no one's getting too crazy. It's like,
but it was like totally anything just the vibe that everybody was going with.
It was. Yeah, it was crazy.
Isn't it crazy? I'm really grappling with this. Megan Maroney, the new country singer, she had this. It was a quote and it hit me so hard. I couldn't believe it hit me so hard, but it was like, just because it's good doesn't mean it lasts, you know?
True.
And I'm like, that is like such a moment, and then it's just over. And it's never coming back. It's like, now we're in the TikTok generation, and like, we're talking about how y'all got started. Like, this generation will never understand what it's like to go put flyers up and hand them out hand to hand and like, you know, get in a van and duke it out on the road like y'all did. Like, it's just kind of over, right?
I think guys are still getting, bands are still getting in a van and doing that and, you know, experiencing some of it. But like you said, some of the things that are gone, I mean, MTV.
Y'all were kings of MTV.
And going and doing TRL and all that stuff. That's that, like,
even
wow. Like,
do the young kids even know what that's like? That was everything. I would come home from school and die
to
watch TRL.
You race home from school to catch TRL.
Race.
That's where you saw all the music videos.
We went from watching TRL 98 to being on TRL 99.
And what is that like? Did it go overnight for y'all, kind of like that, your success?
Kind of. I mean, I think once My Own Worst Enemy hit radio, it moved pretty quick.
But y'all had been turned down by every label. It's not like people were like knocking at your doors to sign you.
I think
right?
We got our first record deal. I don't know the year, but if Kevin was here, he'd be the guy. He's the timeline guy. But I think from the point we got our first record deal till we were actually on the radio was about another 10 years.
Or like, no, it was like five.
Well, from like Delicious Vinyl.
Delicious Vinyl was a hip hop label.
They maybe
like
five.
Tone Loc and Young MC and they were like, they had this cool office on Sunset Boulevard and they wanted to sign a couple rock bands and they found us in a bar in San Diego in front of no people. This was like 95. We were super heavy then.
No people.
Still experimenting. No, there was like five people in the audience and know, two worked at that company.
Just zero people. They were probably worked there were the people that were there.
Yeah, pretty much.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire. With the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
So yeah, it was about, it was probably 3 or 4 years, but we did some touring and found, we're finding this sound and this style of songwriting that became A Place in the Sun, that record. Mm-hmm. That record, people always say like, oh, you had your whole life to write your first record. We actually wrote that first record, I guess you could call it, our first big record, but we wrote that in like a year.
Really?
Because it was like culmination of, you know, the first heavy record on the independent label came out in 97, did some touring in 97, beginning of 98, and then wrote those songs and recorded them in 98, came out in 99. So it was interesting how that all...
A lot of evolution happened within a short, pretty short window.
Was A Place in the Sun a new sound for y'all? Was that different than your last sounds?
Slightly. We kind of always, each record kind of goes from, you know, ballad to maybe something more pop, melodic. And then we've always had heavy distortion, but we went through a phase where we were pretty heavy, like kind of almost like through the grunge phase where we still had our long hair, but it was, you know, like kind of more Eddie Vedder vibes. We let it get a little dirtier. But we love a little bit from every genre. You know what I mean? We just love good songs and good songwriting. So we've always let our sound just kind of swim around until we found like, okay, that became what people think of when they hear, you know, when they hear the name Lit, they're like, obviously they think of My Own Worst Enemy, but I don't know. We've always just considered ourselves a rock band, not a pop punk band, not a, you know, we didn't really
Did people try to box label. Y'all in? Have you been trying to be defined?
Yeah, and we still get asked all the time, and it's hard to keep up with the terms that they come up with every few years. But
a lot of people still call us a 90s band, and we were like A Place in the Sun. We didn't really have any commercial success till 99. So we caught the very tail end of 90s, but we'll take it because I feel kind of lucky to be part of a decade of music that is such a, you know, legacy, made such a mark. So
that's so true.
We'll take it.
It's so true. So My Own Worst Enemy comes out. It's an 11-week number one song. I mean, this is like the biggest song on the planet. It's in 99. That's when it comes
99.
Out?
Yeah.
99. You're everywhere. You're on all the shows, TRL, VH1. I mean, what's even happening back then? All the talk shows. Talk shows were such a big deal.
Late night TV was a big...
And it wasn't just like, oh, you're on a late night show, which people kind of think of it now. It's still cool, but it's like, that was like coveted. These are like... major moments. You're hanging out with Carmen Electra. I mean, I think you're dating someone famous, aren't you? Don't you start dating someone super famous?
I did. I like
kind
of played around with some famous people.
Yeah, you could say that there.
No,
there was a couple of famous.
I don't know if I would call it romance, romantic relationship.
MTV romance, right?
Yeah,
spring break romance.
We were having a good time.
So y'all are like living the rock and roll life, like as rock and roll as you could ever imagine. What is that like? Just pretty for much. Everyone who ever had this dream or fantasy, especially like people who are a little older like us who can't just go viral on TikTok. Like when it was like really a hard thing to be a rock star, y'all were at the king, at the tip of the top.
We never messed with drugs. Like? I know. I mean, that's the one when you mentioned like we were doing everything rock star. We kept the drugs out of it. And that was probably a big... You know, it probably helped.
You think so?
A lot. We always, you know, we drank and
how'd you
we
know
still
to
drink,
keep the drugs out of it? Because I'm sure it
we just never like we just we're just living it. I think we liked what we were experiencing. We didn't want to escape
had an
anything.
Sense that it could mess it up, maybe. Oh, you didn't want to escape anything. You actually liked just, it.
It was never our.
We were high enough. You know, just on what was happening.
Yeah, we were pretty high off of what was happening in our careers and lives, and you know, like you said, you know, we had a Jägermeister machine in our bus and. For the bus, it was an RV. That was the funniest part, you know, we had the number one song in the country. We were playing all these huge festivals and Woodstock and all this stuff.
Y'all played the Woodstock, though, the one that the documentary was about, where they were all trapped in
the bad one.
The bad one.
We played the bad one.
But y'all played the best day. Day one was a good day.
It was trouble-free.
Thank God for day one, and y'all played day one, but it went
bad. We loved it.
Y'all had a great experience. We pulled up
to Woodstock in a Winnebago. I mean, we were driving ourselves around in a motorhome with the number one song. We didn't, looking back now, like we would have flown someone out, had them take the RV back, brought us a bus. Like we know better now. But at the time we were like, we have to wait till we get back to California to drop this motorhome off. And so it was wild. But
what was that like though, when you're playing Woodstock though, and people are like singing your song, like they know it. There's a huge sea of people that it's so big you can't even see the end of it, and they're like singing your song. Like, how does that actually feel in real life?
I mean, if you watched, you know, you can watch the obviously you could see Woodstock 99 on YouTube or whatever. And if you watch My Own Worst Enemy live on Woodstock, I think that was the first time that we stopped in the middle of the song and let the crowd sing Still Burning.
Oh my
Please
God.
Tell Me Why.
Oh, people are losing their minds.
We've done it ever since, but that was the day. I think, I don't know if the camera is on any of us when that happens. It's on the crowd, but we were probably looking at each other, just crapping our pants like, oh my God, they did it.
Did you feel the rush of that energy? I mean, singing, how many people do you think are out there?
Oh God.
I don't know what the total, I mean.
I'm a bad judge of that.
A sea of people. That's all I know.
Could have been 60,000, could have been 150,000. I don't know. Yeah. They just turned into a blur at some point.
Can you actually believe that your dreams came true? I mean, because that's as big of a dream coming true as you could ever imagine. 11 week number one, you're impacting Woodstock, all the biggest music festivals. You're on all the biggest shows. Like, you are literally the kings of the world in the rock and roll world. Like, you had your moment and you still have this legacy and this incredible career that lives on. But like, you had the peak moment that people can only dream of, you know? That's amazing.
It was unbelievable. I will tell you this. I don't know if we've ever really talked about this before, but could we believe it? What you just asked, and the answer is we did believe it, and to the point where we would do. I think it's they call it something else now, but you know, the creative visualization and
manifesting.
Like manifesting.
Mm-hmm. Vision boards.
So before it was that, but
y'all did vision boards.
We didn't do vision.
Y'all are so kind of OG manifestors. Y'all were manifesting. Well, manifesting was cool.
You know what? My vision board was pictures magneted on my fridge.
Okay.
In my apartment, but I also I was pretty OCD then, and my apartment was just decked out. Looked like it was a time capsule from the 50s. And there was,
that's your error.
Everything was placed on the walls and everything was all dialed in, but there was an obvious missing hole in the wall above the couch, to the point where people would go like, what's going there? And I would say, the gold record's going there. And so we manifested the crap out of what we were planning, to the point where when it was happening, we felt like we were riding a bike. Like, we already learned how to ride this bike.
You just knew? How did you know it was supposed to be that big?
We either knew or we were just idiots. You know?
Maybe a combo. Yeah. But how did you know you could handle that? Because it's like handling that kind of fame and success is not for the faint of heart either. I mean, yes, all these people love you, but people also really freaking hate you too, probably. Or did y'all experience that? Or was it just love?
The one thing I thought was a little odd was just on a local level, because we had the success and we didn't come home for, I'd say, really almost 2 years. Mm-hmm. So that there were certain friendships that almost especially other bands, I felt like got a little.
Couldn't handle the heat.
Yeah, almost like we left them behind, or like, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, you're too cool now. But we came back, we're like, wait a minute. No, we just got back. Let's hang out. Like, we honestly, I don't feel like we changed as people.
Well, y'all just went to a new level that they were left behind. I guess, not like intentionally. It's just y'all were just going somewhere they weren't going at that time.
Yeah, and that sucked because, you wanted to come back and like help lift them up, you know what I mean? There's things you can do, and
it was just too much to handle.
Which we kind of did, you know. We also convinced RCA Records, before we had one spin on the radio or sold one CD, we convinced them to give us an imprint label.
What? How do you have that kind of confidence? Because you'd already visualized it.
We already knew that if this thing went, we wanted to help other bands, you know, give them a chance that no one was giving us for so many years, you know?
Really?
So we had a label called Dirty Martini, and it was,
that is so on brand for y'all.
Signed a couple bands, and you know, so we did try to lift other people up too along the way, and we would always get local bands to open up for us when we would come back home and stuff. And we still do to this day. We love having if a local band in a town that we're playing sends us a DM or whatever, and we'll say, you know, hit up the promoter and we'll give our blessing. And
we
like bands that take their shot, because that's what we did. We were relentless,
and y'all were on the grind, so like, you appreciate those kind of breaks. You know what that means to somebody, because you know what it means to you when y'all were grinding. You know,
it did get crazy. Back to the late night thing, I remember, you know, when we're playing shows pretty much every night, and then I just remember it being so nerve-wracking to do shows like Jay Leno and this thing, because you're flying across country.
Now you're regretting that you're the lead singer, right?
150%. Yeah. But those were just nutty times. And I'm just, you know, as much as I wanted to settle down and hide, I wouldn't look at my calendar. I wanted my itinerary the morning of, and that was it, because it just got to be overwhelming.
You couldn't look past the day. Like, you had so much on one day that you could not look too much farther, because your brain couldn't handle it.
Exactly.
It would cause anxiety.
Major.
If you're in February and you're and you're looking at your schedule in August and in your brain, and you're just, it was too much. So yeah, we figured out a way to just literally look at what we have today, what we have tomorrow morning. And we would just keep doing that until we got, you know, down the road. But
who was booking your days? Your manager?
Yeah.
You have to have full trust in whoever's handling your calendar.
In RCA, our publicist.
Did you have good luck with all the people who were on your team?
We had a great team.
Yeah, nobody, awesome team.
Like, it was all symbiotic and good energy, and like, yeah, you didn't struggle in that area?
You know, and it was interesting back then, too, because there was no social media. There was, I mean, even texting wasn't as big as it has become. And we had old school day sheets, which, if any musician, touring musicians out there, we still demand them. When we wake up, if there's not a day sheet in the bus and the tour manager's like, check your master tour.
No,
we're like, dude, no, I need an arrow, and I need, like, I'm dumb when I'm out here. I need you to tell me.
Not have to pull up your phone and get the time. You need to see it. Yeah.
So we communicated really, I would say, a lot more effectively back then, because it had to be a phone call, you know, or, I mean, there was a lot of emails and stuff too, but you had papers laying around with stuff on them, and it wasn't just like everyone was on their own to figure out the app or whatever. So we really, there was a lot of communication, a lot of, you know, 10 times a day contact with people doing it.
We
so
had tour books too, actually, come to think of it. I have a stack of the different books that literally have, yeah, that was kind of your master tour then. So yeah, you have the hotels,
like,
and
everything,
an area for notes, you know, and pages of it. And I actually have, I got to find it, but I actually treated it as kind of a diary at first. Yes. So I actually went through and wrote like some of these crazy experiences.
You did? Which, okay, yeah. What were some of the things you wrote down? Tell us some of the, just,
I mean,
like your day-to-day life.
Like you're saying, just like about the crowds, you know, like tonight the crowd was singing our song so loud, it was insane, like goosebumps, just like those kind of moments, you know, I can't believe, like, we're heading to Texas or whatever, and like going a lot of first time stuff, you know.
Was it pretty much all good with you guys in this phase, or was it like, was it all good, exciting, like we manifested this is where we're supposed to be energy, taking in the experiences, or was there a dark undertone to it at all, or was it like, had y'all just gotten so ready for it that it felt good, like you're prepared, you know, like, I wonder, because sometimes when people get hit with that kind of fame, it kind of can take a downward slip sometimes.
That was another, I think, thing that being brothers and being with Kevin and Alan. Alan was our original drummer, who we also grew up with.
And Alan passed, and that's a big moment in y'all's band.
Huge,
I'd love to circle back to how that impacted, because that was like life changing for y'all.
But the fact that we were brothers that had built that foundation for the 10 years leading up to that really helped, because, you know, you've heard the term like feeling alone in a crowd or whatever. You can be pretty isolated even though you're in front of 50,000 people, because you're in a bus, you're backstage in a room, you can't really go out there because you know things will go down or whatever.
It's not really safe for you to be in crowds of people when you're at the height of startup like that.
Yeah, totally. So having each other was really, I don't know what it would be like to go through that alone. Like
that might be what's isolating and lonely. Yeah. Maybe having each other, even though y'all could drive each other crazy and fight like brothers, but you had the safety and comfort and the true, like, love and bond of brothers, too. Like, true,
definitely.
That's that true bond of trust.
And we had, it's like taking home with you on the road. You know what I mean? You were in all these strange places, especially when you go international. You're in these countries that are just, like, the culture shock, you know? But if you had your group, you know, guys, not just brothers, but, like, people you've known your whole life, it felt
you take home everywhere with you. That is such a good distinction. I think that's why Michael loves being in a band, because he loves, like, Bill and Graham, like, brothers.
Yeah.
Y'all have been, like, mentors, and they call y'all big brothers, like, big brothers to 1,000 horses, which has been so cool. But it's, like, it does make it probably, if you can all get along and love each other, ultimately, it makes it sweeter, because it's like being with your family, you know? You're not just alone, which
it's always cool to celebrate those moments with people that have worked as hard as you too. It's like, I mean, this is another analogy, but going to these crazy places, you know, overseas, and, you know, if you have a girlfriend, especially nowadays, you know, and you're seeing these beautiful places, you're like, it's not that cool when you don't get to like share it with somebody. So it's the same kind of thing with, you know, these pinnacle moments in a career.
It probably just made it feel, I love that. So what is the dynamic between you two? Like, what are the roles? Because y'all obviously have figured out how to make it work. Who is what? How do y'all work this out? Of just like doing all the things together. How do y'all define your roles? How do you guys navigate each other? How have y'all created your working boundaries with being brothers, bandmates, all up in each other's life, and make it work so well?
we come together at a middle ground a lot of the time. The dynamic definitely is its own thing. We're very different in so many ways, but I think.
Like what ways? How would you define, what are your differences?
Well, Jeremy's always kind of been more the, he's 2 years older. He's the big brother. And that's, he's kind of taken on more like sort of manager role, especially in the early days. And then I probably even still to this day, but so in that sense, I guess I got to be a little bit more kind of like a little crazier, not as like.
Because you knew I was taken care of. I'm a little sister too. I had a very responsible older sister who would organize everything as well. It's kind of like, well, I don't need to do that.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that was a balance that I found later in life is like, oh, wait, okay. We're not kids. He's my big brother, but he's not, you know, we're both grown ups. So we need to take responsibility for our own grown up shit.
Is that a growing thing? Was that like a moment that y'all's relationship changed?
Probably. And it's still, we still kind of, you know, tug back and forth on some of that at times. But I think we're both very creative.
Start from kids to adults. There's a whole life of evolving, but yet you know each other as the kid and that's how you imprint. But then you've evolved into men, you know?
Yeah. We're both, I'll let you talk a little bit now too, but we're both perfectionists. So I think we're hard on ourselves and come, you know, with that. And yeah, but so we kind of butt heads at times, but.
That's probably good if y'all are both such perfectionists so like wanting it your way.
Yeah.
When y'all finally do duke it out and reach the final decision, it's the right decision, you know, because for y'all both to be able to give and land somewhere means it's the right decision. So that kind of works.
It's interesting because we've been doing this for so long and doing it for a living, you know, for 25 plus years now, but we're still very game tape oriented. You know, we're like a team. And then after the show, what we've been trying to do recently, we've kind of adopted a new technique where we try not to do game tape while we're all still full of adrenaline and like
give
sweat
a couple days,
or like later on that night or the next morning or whatever, when it's like we've calmed back down, because we will literally go back into the dressing room and be like, second verse of the, you know, blah 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 song or whatever, like you dropped the ball on that. What the hell were you thinking when you called the audience this and they're that and whatever, and because you're just so wound up so tight, you know, sometimes. But
and you can notice whatever y'all are so tight that you know when anybody does anything that's not like exactly, and y'all have played together forever, you feel it all.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
But I guess in a way, as many times as that's gotten heated backstage, you know, and maybe been not the right time or place, I like that it we're still that passionate about it, because it would be very easy just to be on autopilot at this point, you know,
totally.
Flip right. The switch, show up, go through the motions, get paid, go home.
You guys
call
are
it a day.
Not on autopilot
we don't
at
do
all.
That. Yeah.
Like, I feel like you're opposite of autopilot. I feel like y'all actually are like more in it than ever. I feel that energy from you guys right now. It's not like y'all are just like, oh yeah, My Own Worst Enemy is a massive hit that is still living on to this day as a massive hit. That's wild. You know what I mean? It's like
wild.
One of those hits that is like for history books. But like, y'all could just rest on that, but you don't. Like, y'all make new albums. Like, your latest album was so good. I freaking love that one.
Thank you.
So good. Gold. Wait.
Tastes Like Gold.
Tastes Like Gold. Oh my God.
We
so
just
good.
You gotta love, if you're not like sort of, I don't want to say reinventing yourselves, because we've reinvented ourselves and kind of gone back and tried to find what we were, you know what I mean? And that's a challenge in itself.
Break that down a little bit. What do you mean? Find
well,
what
like
you were?
So you mentioned our latest record, Tastes Like Gold. We literally, because Jeremy and I as songwriters sort of have allowed ourselves, you know, to move to Nashville and been coming to Nashville for a long time and writing
country
with
here.
Just, yeah, and with just different types of writers. And we felt like we learned so much and we evolved as writers. But then, you know, to literally talk to each other and go, why don't we, let's try and find where our heads were at when we were writing, you know, in the mid 2000s or even in 99. Like, what do we do different?
With no influences, but yeah. Yourself.
And we talked about, you know, do we plug into amps and do we get into a room and make noise? And
so
that's how
back.
We used to write. But so
you
we did
back.
A little bit, not so much in the same way we did in a dirty warehouse, but we know he'd plug into it to an amp and distort it when he's coming up with riffs, and that definitely changes a lot. You know, gives it, you know, you can make sounds that really, when you listen to old lit records, there's crazy feedback and there's things going on that you can't do with an acoustic guitar. And a lot of times those things inspired
the song.
Melodies and lyrics. And
yeah.
So we went, you know, we definitely collaborated with some people that were writing more in that vein and, you know, younger writers that grew up on lit. And it took us back there.
Did it make you feel good to go back? Like to go back to
oh,
your
hell
place?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, and oh, also, you know, there's so many, there's such a really thriving rock scene here now in Nashville.
Yeah.
And there's so many just great writers and producers that are focused on rock. And we were able to, you know, kind of the mission statement, I guess, that we lobbed out there was like, all right, you grew up on lit, you know, we influenced your early days or whatever. Okay. What does that sound like today?
Mm.
That's where we want to know what now that you're a professional songwriter and producer and you're doing it, but we had a part in that. Okay. Now let's go back to that table and tell us what you think lit sounds like in 2022. Two or three or four. And that's been a fun process because, you know, some of these younger, really talented people will be like, you know, what about this idea or that idea? It kind of, it's pretty neat, you know?
Yeah.
Like, sit down
fun.
There, Sonny.
We're old school, but I think that's what I like about, especially where we're at today, is we've always, you know, we love collaborating. We like writing with outside writers and it's kind of pointless. We produce as well, but it's, if you're going to bring a producer in to co-produce, you got to be open-minded. That's the whole point, is to let yourself learn something new, even though we've been doing it for 30 years plus whatever, but you know, we're open to new school thinking.
Yeah.
And these young kids that are writing and that have been producing and writing in these rooms with the computer and without distortion, we still want to hear what they have to say. And they're coming up with some, you know, great stuff in their bedrooms and these little apartments.
It's all like, utilized. So how, okay, so this is a great question. You guys coming from the OG rock star, like the height of what it was like to be a rock star, to now evolving and in this generation where it's like people will go viral, everyone's making content. It's like a one-man show instead of like the band mentality as much. How do you combine the two? Because y'all are kind of doing that. You're kind of bringing these two lifetimes of music together. It's like a different world. Yeah. How are you making that blend?
It's tough. It's tough to go. We're very grateful that we got to experience the MTV years and the radio years and the radio festival years and the big, you know, we got to do all that. And I think it really helped us kind of put our flag in the ground, and we get to still participate in that. Like, we still get played. We get Mile Over Sanity gets played on terrestrial radio today more than when it was a number one hit.
Are you kidding me?
Because it's on multiple formats and stuff.
It was just like the theme song to like a big movie with Ben Affleck, and then Kelly Clarkson singing it on her show.
It continues just every
NHL?
Year.
Wait, hockey? It's like a theme song for the hockey league or something?
That's pretty rare. I just actually did an interview with New York Times about that. The sports writer is talking about, he's doing a whole story on how that song is being played at like over 23 arenas in full rotation, and the sing-along moments they're having, I'm like,
it's one of those songs. It's just one of those songs that's
so
like
crazy,
otherworldly. Yeah. When you hear it, it's the opening riff. How did you even come up with that? Like that moment that, everybody knows that. People lose
I wish I
their
remember
minds.
What, I would love to. I would have went back and written 10 more of those.
Everybody goes bonkers like the second they hear that, and it never gets old.
I went through a period of time around that time where I was obsessed with this idea of the most simple riff I could possibly come up with. I actually have tried multiple times to write a one note riff, and there was a couple songs that we did, and I did write a one note riff, and then it ended up getting tweaked and modified before it came out. But I was fascinated, and I was, you know, we were influenced a lot back in those days by movies and movie soundtracks, Quentin Tarantino soundtracks, songs that made you, when you hear them, like when you hear Stuck in the Middle with You, you see the guy that, you know, the cop in the chair getting his ear cut off. You can't unsee that when you hear that song, or, you know, certain things like that. And there was a movie called Swingers that, with Vince Vaughn and Jon Favreau, was their first movie together. And that was pretty much our life at that time when that movie came
out.
What
do you mean?
Just, we dressed like that. We went to those clubs. We went and saw swing dancing, you know. We
drove old Cadillacs.
You know, we drove old vintage cars and all that. And there was that scene where they're in Vegas and they pull up to hang out with those two girls in the mobile home, and they're playing Magic Man by heart. And that's when that moment came, it was like, oh, yeah, and it was that, you know, that heart song. And we were writing all these songs, but I was just in the back of my head always wanting to tap into that simplicity, I guess.
And have like that kind of moment, that simple, huge impact moment.
Just, that's when you hear it, it brings you back to a place or a time or a scene in a movie.
Now, when you watch American Pie movies, we got the spot in those now. So we get to be part of the team.
Because that's an American Pie.
Yeah, it's in two or three of them. I think
it's just one of those songs that it's just like when that song comes on in a movie, it makes the moment. So you had that in your, you manifested that. Look at you with your vision board on your refrigerator.
I will tell you this, you're
a powerful manifester over here, guys.
Let me just tell any other fellow manifestors out there, be careful, because one of the mistakes that we made was we checked all those boxes and we forgot to manifest what happens next.
What do you mean?
Well, because it's,
you got the big huge moments.
You didn't get after the moment. Well, I think people can relate to that in a lot of things, like when you get a new car, you know, you get a golden retriever puppy, or you get married,
a new pig,
or whatever it is, and you think that's going to be it, you know, and then you realize, oh, there's what's next, and then you don't want to have to manifest backwards, and you know, back cleanup, right?
So you feel like your problem was you only manifested to the moment. So what's been happening now? You got the moments. You got all of them. All the moments, right? Did you get all, what were the moments that the song that felt like a moment in a movie, that's now been the song in all the moments and all the movies for 25 years. You got the band, you got the success, you got the biggest number one in rock and roll history for 11 weeks for a long time. You got the TRL, the rock and roll era. I mean, like, you guys were lit. Y'all lit it up everywhere. Like, your name is correct. So you had all that. Now what has been happening after those peak moments? Break it down now.
I mean, for me, I really wanted a mid-century modern house on a hill. I got that. I wanted the Cadillac just came out with an Escalade. I wanted one of those. I got that. You know, I wanted to have a son. Got that.
He's the best kid ever.
He was awesome. And then all these big crazy things that I just thought that's it, you know? And then, I had all those things and then God said, okay, now check this out. This is called a midlife crisis.
Oh, what was that?
Good luck with this.
Tell me about the midlife crisis.
It just, you know.
When did that hit?
All that hit right after all that.
So it really is a thing. Like, you
I
get
had
all
my
those?
First one at 30.
Your first midlife crisis. Because you kind of got to peak life experiences sooner than others, per se. So you had a midlife crisis at 30. What happened?
Yeah. Oh, man. Just got, you know, just got into a dark place and a confusing place. And
like, what were the
got
pieces?
Separated from my wife and, you know, became a joint custody, you know, single dad.
What was that like? How did that change?
Really, really difficult.
How so?
You know, really hard. Just trying to stay on top of the career thing and stay creative and stay focused, but also, you know, be a dad, you know, and be.
Is it hard to be solo dad? Like, because before, when you're married, you can bounce it off of each other, your teammate. You don't have to do the full 24/7 with the kid. You know, you can hand off. When you're solo, like, it's solo. What's that? Yeah. What is that? That's a new dynamic.
It was a lot. Yeah. It's well, we can both relate
because
he
divorces.
Was right behind me. You know, he's 2 years behind me in real life. He was 2 years behind me in divorce
was,
and midlife crisis. Too.
I don't think I had a, I don't think it was a midlife crisis for me. It was a cheating ex-wife, but,
just, you know, if you're,
but still, yeah, might've been her midlife crisis. but I think being a single dad for a guy in a touring band for us was, we come off the road and we're 100% present. So you could do the, you know, you get up, you can make the lunch, take the kid to school, show up for, you know, the PTA dad stuff. You know what I mean? So when we're gone, we're gone. When we're home, we're
so you don't get like a little in between time where you can kind of rest and transition from road to home. Like when you're home, you are full blown dad mode and you've got to be present because you're with your kid. Right.
And it was something we look forward to, you know, that's one of the hardest things. I'm sure, you know, Michael knows that feels like too. It's way harder to leave when you have that, you know, a little one at home, just
we also
confused.
Once we had little ones, we really reeled in the schedule quite a bit. Like
you
we told our agents and our managers, like, hey, we can't be gone for 9 months straight like we used to, like, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. Like every 2 or 3 weeks, like either we have to go home for a couple of days or they have to come out for a couple of days or whatever. We just tried to be a lot more not just gone.
But you really made it work with your ex-wife. Like, you're still friends with her. Y'all get along. Like, how, that's like y'all's parents being great divorced people. Like, how did you do that? How did you, it could easily have gone south. I don't know exactly how yours went.
Yeah.
But. It's okay now.
Okay.
We just, you know, made a decision and a commitment early on that our son was going to come first and the greater good for the family was going to always come first. You know,
I had a lot y'all were able to honor that.
Yeah.
Which is really remarkable.
I had a lot of relationships after that and along the way that couldn't really hang with that dynamic.
So if they couldn't hang, would they fall off?
Yeah.
So you kept that the centerpiece. Like if this new person could not honor that the family unit was going to be the centerpiece, they're going to fall off. That's awesome.
Some like stronger girls would appreciate it and the not so stronger ones would be intimidated by it. But it was a necessary thing for me just to.
That's a great point that you're making, though. I love that. That even though you and your ex weren't going to work out, you're like, we're still going to make this family priority.
Yeah.
What a great message.
Yeah.
To Jake, and that's why y'all have awesome kids.
Yeah.
Both y'all kids are so awesome.
They are great kids. It's crazy what those kids went through, and then having, you know, traveling dads, and they're both college on the way to. Jake graduated college. Mine's about to, and yeah, they're kicking ass.
Hey. That's amazing. They've seen so much. They know so much.
I know, yeah.
It is wild.
Yeah, and they're not, like, Jake doesn't even really drink. Like, he's not really, like, I mean, he will, but, like, never been, they've never had, like, big, I don't know, like, it doesn't seem like they've had big party phases or anything like that. It's just because y'all have never made, everything's kind of been available, but y'all have had great boundaries, too.
Yeah.
They've had their fill of some college life, I think, but within growing up around enough of that craziness, I think they, there wasn't a whole lot that they were like, oh, what's all this about? Or what's all that about? Like, they were around a lot of stuff going up. They had country music stars and rock stars that they call uncle, and, you know, grew up in hotels and tour buses and backstage. And so they've seen a lot, but, they're both just smart kids with good heads on their shoulders. And it's awesome to see them, you know, be so smart and cool.
I can't imagine how that feels though. Like now with Sunny being 4 and a half and like knowing that you have these, you know, especially these next 14 years to really like be a huge impact in her life, and everything you do is going to impact them. And y'all being rock stars and, you know, divorcing and like these major impacts y'all were able to navigate and always keep your head on straight. That is a testament to you guys. Like, it really is. That's a lot. Thank you. Your families.
Well, people probably wouldn't guess this, but I think AJ and I both were probably the strictest dads in our towns.
I'm telling you, how so?
Like, Jake wasn't allowed to have social media until he graduated high school.
High school?
I didn't care. All the other kids were doing it. I was like, so what? You know, I just knew, I knew the dangers of it because I was on it. It was part of my job. I'm like, you don't need this. They were allowed to do a lot of stuff that most kids weren't allowed to do and had a lot of freedoms that maybe a lot of kids didn't have. But there were things that just, it was this way. And
if getting, the earlier you get some of these things like social media and other, it's going to impact you and you cannot unimpact it.
Right.
Yeah. And you knew that because you'd seen it on the big scale. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I would take his iPhone and just throw it in my gun safe. Sometimes for, you know, a couple weeks, sometimes for a month. But I bought him, I think worse than not having his iPhone was I bought him like the cheap burner phone from the grocery store when you had to like load it up with a calling card for minutes, like a little flip phone. And I was like, oh yeah, dude, this is your phone now. And I think it was more embarrassing to have to communicate with people on that than it was to lose the iPhone in the first place.
Look at this. So, insight. Pretty good. Get into the headspace here.
911.
I love that. Okay. So we're already at almost an hour, so I'm going to try to wrap up. But really quickly though, there was a season of Slide Bar, which was so cool. I mean, you owned a rock and roll bar in Orange County for like years. It was, do you still own it? Or you're
yep, I sold it. I got rid of everything California.
End of an era.
Did you say season of Slide Bar? It was like a TV show. Huh? Like a,
yeah. It should have been a TV. It wasn't a TV show.
It could have been.
It was open for 15 years. It was an amazing, fun.
The spot.
Crazy spot. A lot of bands.
Would wrap around the parking lot to get into Slide Bar.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of craziness. A lot of people met there. A lot of children were conceived after being there. A lot of bands got their start there. It was just a wild time.
Was that on the vision board?
No.
It wasn't? How did that come into the play then?
It was something that I'd always kind of wanted to do and kind of had a passion for, and always had a passion for design and for entertaining and all that stuff. And so, it was another one of those things like, hey, I remember our business managers at the time forbid me to put all my money into a bar restaurant. And they told me that, you know, 9 out of 10 restaurants fail in the first year. And I was like, well, 99 out of 100 bands never get a record deal. And that worked out all right for us. So
I'm going to bet on myself again.
These odds actually seem pretty good.
Jeremy.
Pretty good odds.
Okay. So I want to circle back to like a key moment in y'all's band and life. And then I'm going to wrap this up. But when Alan passed away, tell me about that part of the band, because he was a brother. Y'all started the band together. And I know that was like a big, huge, earth-shattering moment in the band. Talk to me about that experience and how y'all moved through it and what you took from it.
Yeah, I mean, Big Al was, you know, when I stopped playing drums, Big Al was the guy who came in and, you know, he was our friend that played drums. And he was, you know, he was an awesome dude. And yeah, he was, it took, when he got sick, brain cancer, it was caught us off guard. I mean, everyone was doing sort of their own things at the time. He was opening a boxing gym in Arizona and he was doing really well. And, we were preparing for a tour with Kiss overseas and he was going to come back. We're going to start rehearsals. And when he came back into town, he was getting disoriented and lost on, you know, trying to find the rehearsal space and little things that just weren't adding up. And we were just like, that's weird. Man, you spent so many years here. How do you not know your way around? And then, one thing led to another and he was just getting all these forgetful things that were happening. And he was in a Target buying, stuff for the tour and just completely lost it. Didn't know where he was. And we're like, man, this isn't normal. Took him to the hospital and they started running tests and they found cancer in his brain. And it pulled the rug out from under all of us and our families. And honestly we weren't sure we were going to keep the band going. We thought we were just going to call it.
Well, it was too big of a thing at that moment to really see past the trees. You know, we were in the woods. We were like, not sure what even came next, but
we just shifted into family, but we knew we had to take care of him and be there for him and go through it, together. So
y'all canceled your tour with Kiss, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big deal.
They were really, they understood and they were sweet about it and it was cool. But we just didn't think there was any other choice. We wanted to be there with him and he was in Cedar Sinai Hospital in LA and we were kind of just commuting there every day and hanging out with him. But, and just recently our friend Britt Turner from Blackberry Smoke passed away from the same exact brain cancer.
Really?
So crazy.
And, it's really a crazy thing because it's been he passed in 2009, I think. Here we are that many years later and they haven't gone anywhere with this disease. Or if they have, they haven't told us, but it's just like, it just seems like this, why is it happening? Why don't they know any more about it? Why can't they figure this thing out? And it's like more and more young people are getting, it's just really frustrating. And, but yeah, that was a big deal.
And that's you, that's the first time you cut your beard off, right? Cause you had developed this signature style of this beard,
yeah.
Which we can't stop talking about. We can't end the interview without the beard. Where did this come from? And then that was when you decided to give it as like a big token of yourself and put it in with him, right? Mm-hmm. With Alan?
Yeah. Well, it just started out as some goofy thing and ended up kind of becoming my trademark.
It's totally your trademark with the blonde spiky hair.
But yeah, at his funeral.
And you're like the sweetest guy, Jeremy. Like you walk in and you have a presence. Y'all both do. Y'all got a presence. And then to like hear y'all talk about being the strict dads at the PTA. It's like, no, you're not.
Yeah. No, we were standing around at the funeral. People were putting stuff in the ground, letters and flowers and bottle of whiskey or, photographs and cards. It's just, stuff. And I was like, man, I didn't think of that. I didn't think of anything I could bring. And I was looking around. I'm like, well, he's not going to need my watch or my, my necklace or whatever. And then I saw a guy that, about 100 feet away digging another hole in the ground and whatever. And I waved him over and he told him, gave him the universal sign, bring me some scissors. And he brought these giant rusty shears out. I don't know what they used them for, but
hedge trimmers.
Whacking your beard this.
Trimming rose bushes or whatever. And his daughter, Gina, Al's daughter, was there. She was 18 at the time, so I handed her the rusty shears and she cut the beard off and I threw that in there and that's in the ground with him. And then 10 years later, I decided,
you didn't grow it back for a while.
Yeah, it was 10 years.
And you took the blonde away for a while, too.
Yeah.
Were you just like, I'm going to just see.
This is my emo phase.
I've gone through my emo. I cut my hair and dyed it dark. You've been there for my emo phase. Like, I get it.
I had bangs. It was
all
the
thing. What were you thinking in your emo phase?
Change.
I'm a new person now.
Yeah.
Did you feel like a different person for a minute?
Butterfly.
We could talk for another hour about this, but that emo phase, dark hair with all that stuff, and that was all right when I started coming to Nashville too.
What do you think that meant for you?
Changes are coming.
But now you're like, I actually like my beard and my blonde. That's where I feel my best. Is that what happened? You missed it?
Back to the roots.
No longer a hair farmer. He's
So what's going on with Lit now? What are we excited about? And then we'll wrap up because you guys have so much happening. You're touring like crazy. I feel like y'all's music is awesome. Y'all made this great album. Thanks. Like y'all just look great. You got good energy. You just got picked up with the NHL. I mean, I feel like y'all are like so like moving and grooving. It feels really exciting right now with Lit.
Just like, staying inspired, you know, just.
Y'all just played the Bobby Bones $1 million show. That was a fun. And I know y'all will probably talk one day to him about it, but it's like, I just feel like that is so exciting. Like y'all are just like in the mix of like really exciting, good energy things.
We like to get invited to things. And it's, I feel like our
like
emails are. No,
I that was his event was so awesome. And obviously, you know,
love St. Jude.
Yeah. Too, just all that stuff. And this town, it's just such a creative place to be, and we're just so happy to be here now full time. And so, yeah, good things are going, and we're just doing what we love to do, and we're just still going, and feels good. And it does feel like there's another wave coming, and another, mm-hmm. you know, maybe get another lap around, a couple more laps around. Another,
it's gone 25 years strong, hasn't faded yet. Maybe you never came up with the other plan because this one was just going to stay strong the whole time.
Yeah, right.
Maybe you had a few dips here and there, but maybe this is just the plan that's just going to keep going. You got a place in the sun forever.
We've been
lighting it.
The shows are still,
yeah.
You know, we're still lucky. We still get to play as much as we want. The guarantees are higher now than they've ever been. It's
These
kind of it's a cool place to be in our careers. We're very grateful. And
you
then,
have a name that's established and like proven, and you have like music that people love that cherish still to this day. You know,
that's pretty neat. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's neat.
We're definitely blessed. We're, you know, and like you said, I think being here in Nashville is, you know, we spit out a record quicker than I think we had in a long time, and just, you know, we have to stay on our toes. You go anywhere in Nashville and there's so much talent here that it makes you just want to do things and, you know, and be better.
But I think the young talent appreciates your talent too, though. You know, it's like it all mixes together. People, the new talent is like, is appreciating.
It's come back around big time. It's a trip.
It's not like there's like what's new and what's hot and everything else is kind of like moving into legacy. It's kind of this all big, bowl of just music now, sort of, right?
Yeah, it's all evolving. It's all changing, whether it's country music or rock. You know, like we're talking about these new kids with the new production ideas and a new way of writing, but combining that with the old school. And that's what I'm seeing in all the different genres. And it's a cool sound, you know? There's room for change in all those, you know, all those formats.
I'm excited for you guys. I'm so glad y'all came on. I'm glad we came back like all these years later. You know, I feel like we've all lived a million lives in between, but like the first time y'all came on, I mean, seriously, I could not have been more nervous like starting my podcast, and y'all were so kind to like help me get going. And now
you're kicking ass.
Now here we're all these years later, still like trucking along, but it's awesome. It's fun. It's cool.
Stoked you had us on.
It's great. Okay. So I always wrap with Leave Your Light, which is basically just an open-ended question. What do you want people to know? If you just wanted to drop some inspiration.
Man,
just
whatever comes to mind
in general.
I'd say get off your phone, stay off of social media, just for even if you give yourself a couple of days a week where you're just figure yourself out, you know, and listen to yourself more than other people.
Love that.
I think I would say that, you know, there's a lot of, there's a lot of darkness right now in the world, and a lot of people are hurting, and a lot of people are nervous. And I would just say that one of the things I've just kind of learned over the years, sometimes the hard way, but really as I gotten older and a little bit more comfortable in my faith and my skin, but you know, no matter what you're going through, you know, it's going to be all right. You're going to get through it. And there's better stuff on the other side, especially because every time you get through it, you feel a little bit stronger and a little bit more courageous for the next one. And just, you know, keep your head up and, you know, keep believing.
I mean, look, y'all are sitting here lit 25 years later when you started off as Razzle, you know? So that's the same. Evolve, get a dream and stick with it, and it's going to work out, you know?
Right.
I love it. You guys are awesome. Will y'all stick around for some burning questions? Just a quick little 10-minute episode. Okay. Lit, you guys are the best. Where can everyone follow you guys, and what do they need to know? As far as like keeping up with you guys.
Litband.com.
Okay.
Litband official. I don't know what we're calling. I think Lit was already taken, so we can't keep it simple for y'all.
Lit Band Official. Yeah, that's the Instagram and the Facebook. Whatever. I don't know. He knows more about all that stuff than I do.
Just type in lit and y'all's faces show up. I mean,
I don't even have TikTok.
I don't.
Just go to a hockey game.
Yeah, go to a hockey game and you'll hear it. Or watch a movie and it'll probably be in the middle of it somewhere. Because it's the most iconic song. Love you guys. Y'all are the best. Thank you for joining. Thanks. Okay,
love
stick
you
around
too.
For Thursday. Burning Questions.
Give Sonny and Michael a big kiss for me.
I will.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.